Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
Back in 2002, the late, great Myron Copeland, and let me set this up for those of you who are not from Pittsburgh or maybe a little bit younger, Myron Cope was to Pittsburgh Steelers football what, gosh, I don't even know who you would compare it to. Vin Scully was to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Bob Uecker was to the Milwaukee Brewers. He was the voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers for 30-some years. Also was a tremendously talented author, hosted one of the first sports talk radio shows in the United States, and was a very colorful character, among other things, invented the terrible towel. So back in 2002, Myron Cope wrote a book called Double Yoy, that was a sort of a loose autobiography memoir, and I got a copy of it, and I was invited to interview him. So we set up the interview, and I was no more technically adept in 2002 than I am in 2025. I was just a lot younger. And I taped the interview, and it was unbroadcastable. There was this loud hum in the background. I used one of those, if you're old enough to remember, the little Radio Shack suction cup things. I didn't know you weren't supposed to use that. That's what I used to tape the interview over the phone, and it sounded terrible. So I wrote a story about Myron Cope and about the book, but I was unable to broadcast the interview on the show. Now, fast forward to a couple of weeks ago. I interviewed Myron Cope's daughter, Elizabeth, and her co-author, Dan Joseph. They are the author of a new biography of Myron Cope called Behind the Yoy. And I thought, I bet I still have that tape somewhere. We've moved houses, and I knew I had seen it in the house move. So I got the cassette tape out, and it was just as bad as I remembered. But you know what we have in 2025 that we didn't have almost 25 years ago is cheap digital signal processing and filtering. So I spent a couple hours actually filtering this thing through several different layers of noise reduction, and I got it to the point where it's listenable. I had to re-record a couple of my parts. So you might hear some edits here, but here it is. This is a never-before interview with young Jay Thurber, recorded in 2002 with the late, great Myron Cope.
Well, thank you for taking the time, and I guess the first question I want to ask you is, I'm always interested in how people get ready for a broadcast. And
I should set this up. The very next day, I believe the Steelers were playing the Vikings, I think, and we had to keep the interview to 20 minutes because he was getting ready for the broadcast. So here we go.
You said this is your prep day.
Yeah, well, usually it's spread out over a few days, but this week I got squeezed in, so this is it. I got to get it done today.
What is your prep work? How do you get ready for your prep?
I follow the Steelers, of course, constantly. I'm up to date on them pretty well, and principally I'm interested in learning about the opposing team, because there's so many changes around the league every year now, free agents moving around one thing and another, but I've always gone about it this way. And the teams themselves in the NFL are very good in that they produce a mountain of information about themselves. And so I pour through that, check a few things out, one thing and another, you know. And Minnesota really sent a mountain of stuff.
What do you take into the booth with you then?
All kinds of notes on index cards that I read and reread and reread right up to practically the time I go on the air, hoping that maybe 10% or 25%, if I'm really lucky, will stick to my brain. I hardly ever look at the cards once I'm underway, but I just study these things hoping that a percentage of it will stick to my brain, and when it's appropriate because of developments on the field or whatever, that I'll remember some of that stuff.
Now, I heard you on with Doug Hirth a week or two ago, and he said you're still writing on a typewriter.
Yeah, it's about 40 years old. It's a Hermes portable manual typewriter.
Have you gotten into the computer or internet thing at all?
Total computer illiterate. When I started writing my book a year ago, February, I went out and bought $1,300 worth of computer stuff because I was told you must do this on a computer. And my next door neighbors, who were helping me with the book, he's an attorney and former English teacher. He was one of my three local editors as I wrote the book. And his wife was very helpful in that after 3 days, they spent long hours of 3 days trying to teach me. And after the third day, it was about 10:30 at night when I left my house, and I said, hell with it, and I took all the stuff back and went back to the old Hermes. But Carol next door, they're Bob and Carol Path are their names, and she took over. You know, as I'd turn out the chapters on my typewriter, she would convert the manuscript to computer.
Well, that's a hell of a friend.
You betcha.
Yeah, that's one hell of a friend. Something I noticed about the book, I don't want to get too philosophical, but I noticed you don't talk too much about growing up, about your childhood.
Because I'm a typewriter, and my lead editor, Roy McHugh, also believes in typewriting. And I didn't think that my growing up as a kid was that important or arresting for the reader. It was a choice of choices constantly to make, and it's not an autobiography, it's a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It's only partly autobiographical, and then I move into other areas, my takes on various public figures and sports figures I've come into contact with over the years, and of course there are essays in which I shoot off my mouth. as Roy always preached to me, you know, there were a million anecdotes I could tell. But you write an anecdote to make a point. And once you've made the point, get on to the next point. Now, don't just see how many anecdotes you can pour into the book. So my childhood was not that arresting to a reader, I don't believe. I talk about it somewhat, my teens. And all, but
one of the things you talk about is your boxing misadventure.
Well, it's there, and that I thought people, you know, I wanted people to have a chuckle now and then in the book. And my editors told me there are times when you laugh out loud.
There are times when you read the book and you laugh out loud, but there are also times when you really kind of pull the heartstrings too, and not in a bad way.
Oh, cover says the revealing memoir, and in some ways it's revealing if anybody really cares about things I haven't talked about in the past on a radio or television, you know.
I know when you gave up your daily radio show, you talked a lot about Mildred, your wife. Was it hard to write that chapter about Mrs. Cope?
Yes, that was a very difficult chapter to write. I started it on Easter Sunday afternoon, as I wrote in the book, you know, and it was raining outside, not exactly a day to pick your spirits up, but then I finished it the next day. Yes, it was difficult, because I still miss the lady very much.
Have you ever put that down on paper before?
No.
Okay.
No, Mildred, as I describe her, was not a person who coveted the spotlight.
No.
She was cooperative when media wanted to do stories, family-type features, you know. But she never, you know, really enjoyed being out front.
Let's jump back to some happier stuff. I asked you a little bit about your childhood. Tell us a little bit more. Whereabouts in Pittsburgh did you grow up?
In Squirrel Hill.
Okay.
And what were your influences as a kid, either writing or being on the radio or what? What influenced your outlook on life?
At first, I thought I had aspirations briefly of becoming a lawyer, but once I started writing on the high school paper, I knew that what I wanted to be was a newspaper man, and there was nothing else in mind. That's where my passion lay, to be a newspaper man.
Did you go to Alderdice?
Yes. I wanted to be a newspaper man or a major league infielder. I take stock of all the short guys who had made it in the big leagues and dream of it. go to bed at night thinking about them and saying, you can do it, kid.
When did you decide that being an infielder was not going to be your forte?
Well, you recall my story about the pirate triad?
Yes.
I guess it was then and there.
Okay.
And the coach says, okay, kid, you can go home now. The scout, rather.
I'm jumping around a little bit because I know your time is short.
I am on a crusher of a day here working, like I said, trying to get 3 days' work crammed into one.
Yep, and I want to talk a little bit about broadcasting. You write about Howard Cosell, and my impression of sports broadcasting is that there was really before Howard Cosell and after Howard Cosell, that things really changed after he entered the field. How did sports broadcasting change, in your opinion, when Howard came on the scene, first in radio and television?
Well, you know, he always described himself as a guy who tells it like it is, which is a grammatical error.
Yes.
But he talked like he was a trailblazer for the truth. That was not the case, because by then, there had existed a tradition that sportscasters did not necessarily be critical of athletes or management. They tried to walk the fence, more or less, most of them, because if they got a job, for example, broadcasting a baseball team's games or football teams, they felt like they were safer with their job that way. But Howard wasn't the first to deviate from that.
Who was?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I know I did from the very beginning when I started broadcasting the Steeler games in 1970, which, by the way, was the year that the Monday Night Football started and Howard became a smash hit.
Well, then if only you had been in New York, maybe, instead.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying that maybe that would have been you instead on Monday Night Football rather than...
Well, I never had any desire to be anywhere but in Pittsburgh. The magazine editors used to say, and fellow magazine writers, when are you moving to New York? And I'd say, not unless I'm ordered to. Because, you know, I was under contract first to the Saturday Evening Post and then Sports Illustrated. But I've always liked it here in Pittsburgh. And unless I had to go to New York, I was staying put. I loved visiting New York in those days. It was a lot of fun, but I was happy where I'm at. And when you're happy where you're at, maybe it's not so wise to shoot for New York.
Let's talk a little bit about being on the radio, because you really, in my mind anyways, you sort of pioneered the sports radio talk show in this town. You mentioned in the book that there was somebody on KDKA who was doing, I guess, a non-offensive sort of, I gather, a little bit of a non-offensive or maybe ineffectual sports talk show in the evening.
No, my predecessor at WT, Tom Bender.
Okay.
But the show wasn't working, it wasn't producing ratings, and so they called me in, as I relate in the book. Tom was a longtime friend of mine, and there's no way I wanted to take his job, but the GM said, if it's not a matter of taking Tom's job, because if you don't take this and try it, we're just going to replace it with music. We'll discontinue the show.
What kind of show was Tom Bender doing then? What, was it a typical kind of sports talk show then?
I doubt it. My show, you mean?
No, his show.
Well, there weren't other sports talk shows around. I think it was the only one in town at the time.
Okay.
And sports talk was still in its infancy.
Is that good or bad? I mean, we now have in Pittsburgh two full-time sports talk show stations. New York has two or three. I think every town seems to have at least one. Is it good to have that much sports talk? Is it useful? Does it add anything?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of whether it's a question of whether it's good or bad, Jason. I mean, there's obviously a demand for it. Sports has become so huge because of its growth on television. You have people, many more, a greater percentage of the populace who are intensely interested in in many things happening around the country in sports. And radio stations and television stations, they don't put on sports shows with the idea of nobody listening to them or watching them. So if the demand decreases, so will the shows. If it stays strong, the shows will continue. But good or bad, hey, we're talking sports. It's not virtue versus evil.
Where did all this sports talk and all this commercial interest in sports come from? Because as you talk about in the book, in the 50s and back to the 1940s, the sports pages of the Pittsburgh newspapers, I think you say, were pretty abysmal. Where did sports explode as such a big industry in people's mind?
Television did it.
So television did it. It needed to feed the television beast.
Television was
so
growing itself. So naturally, you know, they were looking for programming, and with the growth of television grew sports.
Going to pause right here. You're tuned to 88.3 WIRCT Pittsburgh and Tube City Online Radio in McKees.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided compassionate professional memorial services for families at White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striffler's offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company Design Monuments, Striffler's also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at strifflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
This interview was recorded in 2002 with the late, great Steelers broadcaster Myron Cope, who passed away in 2008 and has never before been broadcast. Here's the second half.
And football in particular was very telegenic, a game that could be followed on television. And you know, it's always been hockey's liability that they don't seem to televise as well as football, baseball, and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But television was growing. Remember, it was a post-World War II thing. It didn't exist before then.
Do you listen to any of these sports talk radio as you travel? Or
when I'm driving.
And what do you think of it, having done a sports talk show for so long? What do you think of the tenor of it?
Well, there are different types of shows. You read my chapter, Talk Shows and Shock Shows.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Well, that expresses it. Like anybody else, there are shows I enjoy and shows I don't.
I don't remember if you answer this in the book, and maybe this is a dumb question. I apologize. Other than Steelers games, did you ever call any other sports?
College football, that's all, when I was pressed into emergency situations by the station.
Tell me a little bit about Jack Fleming. What kind of a guy was Jack Fleming?
Well, Jack was a swell guy. You know, he was an old pro. He not only did West Virginia football and basketball and the Steelers, but for a time he was the announcer for the Chicago Bulls basketball team.
Oh, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, he traveled back and forth like a maniac.
Good
and
God.
He was a big, easy-going guy, and we had a lot of fun. And as I wrote in the book, when I was foisted upon him as a total amateur, and he being the consummate pro, it was a trying time for Jack. But somehow we got through it, and we became a team and good friends and all, and it was a great experience.
Well, there seemed to be chemistry between you and Jack on the Steeler broadcast, and there seems to be chemistry, too, between you and Bill and Tunch.
And now Craig Wolfley on the side.
Yeah, well, for sure. Well, of course, you had worked with Bill Hillgrove at WTAE, so that was not a completely out-of-the-blue partnership there. So that was not a completely out-of-the-blue partnership there.
Yeah, I'm lucky in that, you know, I've been lucky in that all my 33rd year, there have only been two Steeler head coaches in all that time, which is remarkable.
Sure is.
And I'm lucky in that I haven't gone through a succession of broadcasting partners. It was Jack and I there for a long time, and then they decided to bring a third guy into the booth, so Merrill Hodge was the man. And he only stayed, I don't know, 2 years or so. You know, he was ambitious to get on a network, and he did.
Yep.
And Coventry replaced him, and now Craig Wolfley beefs us up on the sideline. But all of these guys, for me, have been very easy to work with. My approach to the thing is that it's supposed to be fun and have some laughs along the way. And I think that's been shared by these people I've worked with.
What makes them, in your mind, what makes them sound good, or what makes for good chemistry when you're all together in the booth?
First of all, friendship does. And Jack and now Twinch and I and Billy and Wolf have been friends throughout. I imagine that there are a number of booths where that is not the case, where people are jealous of one another, or the play-by-play man tries to sit on the color analyst. I imagine that, and I've heard a few stories over the years, so I imagine that happens. But we're pals, you know. So we sit down there to do a broadcast, and we're having fun.
So in the last couple of months, now we have lost Jack Buck, we lost Chick Hearn, Harry Carey died a few years ago, and it seems that the people who end up replacing them, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, are often fairly bland. They don't maybe have the style or the flair of some of the broadcasters. Vin Scully, I believe. We still have Vin with us, don't we? So where are these very colorful sportscasters going? Why, where is the next Jack Buck, or for that matter, where is the next Myron Cope? And why are they not coming along in these towns?
Well, I don't know that that's the case or not, really, Jason. I'm not familiar enough with who's broadcasting where. I don't follow that kind of stuff because I just go in there and do my own thing. And the guys you mentioned, were all old-timers. And who was it? Some interviewer called me a month or two ago and pointing that out to me, said, maybe you're next.
Oh, Jesus.
Said, thank you.
Good Lord.
I'm an old geezer. But anyhow.
Why would somebody say something like that?
Well, you ask me. You tell me, rather. But anyhow, I laughed and we went on from there. But I am not the kind of guy who constantly sits and listens to television of any kind. I watch games. I watch the news. And I find myself doing less of that and reading more books. I do not watch Sports Center because I don't care if Denver beat Utah in the NBA last night. My interest in sports has dwindled so that my football, I still love baseball and wish the Pirates would do something, you know.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But pro football, I'm as intensely interested as I ever was.
It's 23 years ago, and the Pirates still haven't done
it. But I'm not a Sports Center watcher, that sort of thing, so I'm perhaps not, I know I'm not an authority on what other broadcasters are doing in the networks or in local stations. I assume there's some damn good ones out there coming along, and they'll take the places of the geezers if they're given the leeway to. You know, I was fortunate in that I never had interference from either my station or the Steelers. And if you've got the stuff and you're given that kind of liberty, you should be able to make the most of it and have a style. And whether style is out there and coming along, I couldn't tell you because I tend to read more books than watch television anymore.
What kind of stuff are you reading?
I read novels. I read some nonfiction, things I never got a chance to read when I was, you know, working 70, 80 hours a week in broadcasting.
Whoa.
You've always struck me as kind of a well-read fellow, and of course you started out in newspapers rather than in sports radio. Could you have seen yourself doing kind of a general news-type talk show? Maybe something along the lines of like what Doug Hirth does?
I never imagined myself being on radio doing anything.
Okay.
Or television. I was a writer.
Right.
And as the book relates, I got that call out of the blue.
What?
Would you have ever wanted to do a news talk type show?
I had no desire to, because it never entered my mind that I had any talents for it. I mean, I was happy writing. That was what I was cut out to be.
I have to say, and I'm not trying to butter you up or anything, but it's very nice to get a whole book of your writing again. Are you planning to do any more writing, or are you semi-retired now?
Nope. I'm semi-retired, and I don't have another book in me. That's it. Writing is hard work for me.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, though. I've always sensed, both in listening to your commentaries on TV and to your talk shows, and in the book it comes through, too. I don't want to get philosophical here, but I get the sense that Myron Cope has some doubts about himself. You talk in the book that if you ever decide when you're on the Steelers broadcast that it's time to go, or whatever, that you're going to go. So where does that come from? You've obviously had great success. I don't think you have to prove anything to anybody. Where do these doubts come from?
It comes from being a realist and knowing my age. But I've been saying that since I got into my 60s. Apparently it hasn't happened. They haven't bounced me out. A couple of years ago, I said to the GM at WDVE, I said to him, you know, Bob Roof was his name, in the off season, and I said, there were a couple of games last year at least when I sensed that I wasn't seeing everything that I should on the field. And he said, well, I never noticed that my ratings went up again. And I feel good about what we've done in the preseason so far this year.
There's long been a promotion in this town, turn down the TV sound and turn up Jack Fleming and Myron Cope, or turn up Bill Hillgrove and Myron Cope. Have you ever seen the numbers on how many people in Pittsburgh do turn down the TV sound during a Steelers broadcast?
The last survey I ever heard talked about was about 10 years ago, and we had slightly more than 50% of the TV audience turning down the sound. I'm sure there have been other studies done that show pretty much the same thing. I hear people make reference to them, but I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Okay.
It is a great satisfaction, though, to have that occurring, because it tells you, you know, you got fans out there who like what you're doing.
Well, yeah, and you're on FM now, so they get to hear you in stereo now.
Yeah, well, we know the home team better than the visiting network guys do. That's the whole thing. They come in on a Friday or Saturday, you know, and coaches make a command performance before them in a production meeting. They talk to a few players, and then they go on the air and say, so-and-so told me yesterday. I think that's something exclusive. I think fans appreciate that we know the team, that we're following it constantly.
Well, since my salary and my day job comes from the University of Pittsburgh, I have to ask you, have you been down to see Pitt recently? Your old alma mater, the Panthers, recently.
No, I take them in when I can on television, but remember, I'm traveling Saturdays with the football team very often.
Well, I thank you very much for taking some time to talk with me. Good luck.
And you know, the publisher's ground rules, and I welcome them, is a 20-minute limit on radio interviews.
Mr. Cope, take care of yourself. Thank you so much for talking to me.
All right, Jason.
Good luck tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So other than the giggling idiot asking the questions, that was the late, great Myron Cope, recorded in 2002, an interview I was not able to broadcast because the sound quality was not good, and was able to finally clean it up all these years later. So that's your treat for Super Bowl weekend, or the big game, as we're supposed to call it, because the Super Bowl is a trademark of the National Football League, and they have no interest in you getting to use it. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed that. I will throw that up on my website at jthurbershow.com at some point if you want to re-listen to it. I don't know if it's the greatest interview that was ever done, but how often do you get to hear an interview with Myron Cope? Incidentally, if you want, his book is still available. You can go to skyhorsepublishing.com. The book that he was promoting back then was called Double Yoy, A Half Century of Sports Writing and Broadcasting by Myron Cope. So.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media, Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media, Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at TubeCityOnline.com and click on the donate link.
You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online. We'll